Albania is a fledgling democracy with a tumultuous political climate and a controversial prime minister. It's also a strategic ally of the United States, and yet we rarely hear about it in the American media. With me now for the second of today's underreported segments is Ariane Valier, a recipient of the United Nations Civil Society Award. He's also director from 2003 to 2007 of Albania's leading watchdog group, MIAFT, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to the show. Hi.
Hello, nice to be on the show.
Can you give us some background about Albania to start with? How long has the country been a democracy?
Well, the country's been a democracy in the last 18 years, after 40-some years of the ruling Communist Party. It has opened up from the most anti-Western staunch to a staunch supporter of the United States in the last 20 years. It ranks, according to all polls, is the most pro-American country in the world. And I think the last visit of President Bush was a sign of America's gratitude for friends like Albania. And the warm reception was also, I think, an Albanian expression of what a friendship it has found in the United States. Albania owes a lot of gratitude to the U.S. government, particularly during the NATO intervention in Kosovo, where 2 million other Albanians reside. And even back to President Wilson, you know, insisting that Albania should exist at all in the beginning of the previous century.
But I'd imagine most of the people in Albania today grew up under the regime of the Stalinist Maoist dictator Enver Hoxha, the most eccentric of all of the communist leaders. And he was as staunchly anti-American as anybody could be. Is this pro-Americanism to some degree a reaction to the fact that he's no longer controlling the country?
Sure, that's a knee-jerk reaction coming from one of the most isolated life experiences in the world. But also, demographics have changed. Half of the Albanian population is under 27 years of age, and this is people who grew up, unlike our parents who couldn't watch foreign television, this is people who grew up with Hollywood and American goodies. So in that regard, a new population tends to look a lot more to the West than having any fascination or a nostalgia for the previous regime.
But there's another factor here. Albanians are predominantly Muslim, and most Muslims object to the U.S. presence in Iraq. In fact, there's a very strong anti-American feeling throughout the Islamic world.
This is a bit of a misperception, and we agree amongst colleagues that yes, Albania is America's friend. It's not Albania's Islamic friend. That's Albania's Islam is, for the most part, nominal. It was part of the, adaption to the Ottoman regime, and therefore, I think characterizing Albania as a Muslim country is rather incorrect. Yes, there is a predominantly Muslim population, slightly more than 50%. But like I said, the European type of Islam and sort of the more Ottoman traits, make Albania a very, very unique case.
How healthy is Albania's democracy right now? Are there free and fair elections?
Yeah, Albania does well on some scores. It's a multi-ethnic society, a multi-religious society, yet has to produce the first free and fair elections. And I think one of the biggest struggles with us as civil society is that Albania participating and supporting America in the war of terror is not an exclusive enterprise. It should be an inclusive enterprise, meaning that it should also be coupled with, respecting democracy and human rights and freedom of the media and freedom of expression at home. And sometimes the current Albanian government takes this American support as carte blanche to suppress these issues at home while maintaining America's favor in relationships abroad. And I think this act has to be put into balance. The people who are running the government today, the last time they ran elections was in 96, and they were reported as the most fraudulent election since the fall of the Berlin Wall. And that's why a lot of the emphasis the civil society has been putting in putting the record straight on elections.
Weren't there constitutional amendments just passed to give greater proportional representation? Is that a step in the right direction?
Yeah, that is correct. The constitutional changes went through, and that's a major achievement. It will take a lot of the the tough guy and the former political bodyguards and a lot of the money launderers out of the election scheme, hopefully. But I think there has been reforms in the past on paper. The big question is, how do they materialize in the ground? And this particular government, which has had constantly autocratic tendencies, it took the front page of the New York Times only a few days ago on arms dealing and contraband and trafficking of weapons via U.S. Agents. I think this government has a lot to be accounted for, and would be fairly naive to find pleasure in some laws that have been changed unless it's proven in the ground.
But given his record, why do you think the person who's most responsible for all those abuses, Prime Minister Saleh Berisha, agreed to these amendments to the Constitution, even encouraged their passage?
Sure, that's a beginning. I think Berisha lost favor with the international community following these big explosions in the arms depots and Albania being portrayed in a very unfavorable light. So I think he's struggling to maintain his reputation in the world and in the country. He's the only post-communist leader still standing and running a country in post-Berlin Berlin Wall Europe. Therefore, I think this is his last battle, and I think this is a battle not with him and the rest of the Albanians who seek change. It's a battle with him in history.
Was he opposed to the Hoxha regime, or is he somebody who made adjustments coming out of it?
No, this was a gentleman who was the doctor to the Politburo. He then was delegated by the Communist Party to hush the student protest. And the moment, a pragmatic character, the moment he realized he could not suppress them, then he joined them and decided to lead them. And therefore, I think this has been one of the main struggles, the absence of a true bona fide dissident Albanian generation. And therefore, we have the Communist Party, who basically split in two groups, one who had to play the opposition, because this is the rules imposed by the West, and one who had to play the socialist remnants of the government. And therefore, I think we never had this transformation. Therefore, next year's elections, we will have people who will vote for the first time who are 18 years of age. That means they were born in 91 and never breathed air under communism. And I think more than left and right, or dissidents, non-existent dissidents and former communists, this will be now a big battle of two generations that have nothing in common anymore.
Yesterday, Freedom House ranked Albanian media as the least free in the Balkans, and noted that the prime minister exerts a lot of pressure on the press. You wrote last year in an article for the Huffington Post that the government often accuses its critics of being Jews and faggots. Are those the worst things you can say about someone in the Albanian culture?
No, I mean, this is very unfashionable for moderate Albanians, but I think a government who is very void of good arguments, I think sometimes resorts to very under-the-belt rhetoric, very similar to, the words that you mentioned, similar to fascist Europe in the early 30s. And I think there's two ways to go around it. One is through these reports, to keep complaining and keep whining about how things are bad in Albania. Or the other approach that we at MIAFT had embraced was, try to resist it with dignity and try to provide alternatives so that people have better choices in the next elections. I think, the Prime Minister has an international reputation of being unfriendly to media outlets. In his past rule, he would order the burning down of media headquarters. Now I think this has taken the shape of extraordinary fines on media that are not very favorable to the government, and sort of the flourishing of some of this extremist media. But Albania today is very different from the one in the mid-90s. There is plenty of places where one could express discontent, and I slightly disagree with the Freedom House report. I mean, although there is a lot of government pressure, the plurality of media is as such that a lot of the stories are not going unreported, and there will always be an outlet to stand up to government pressure. So in that regard, this is good news of a society that has matured beyond its political leaders, absolutely.
I'm talking with Arian Velie about the current situation in Albania. Well, you mentioned earlier the New York Times report that senior Albanian politicians, including Prime Minister Berisha, have been allegedly involved in arms trafficking. Is that something that has been covered in the Albanian press?
Yes, it has. And sometimes I think the Albanian press is a lot more impressed about what the internationals think of us and papers like the New York Times or BBC and other outlets say, because to most Albanians this is daily news. And I think it only made international news because there were American actors involved. But for the most part, Albanians are inundated with the scandals of their own government. So yeah, this story took a lot of attention, and I think it was. For us, it was a reality check, because to find out how most of the civilized world reacted to this, we discovered that some of us had almost gained immunity from the stories because they're such a daily occurrence. But hopefully, this won't go so noticed anymore.
Has anyone been arrested? Or has there been an official investigation?
Yes, there's been an official investigation. Three sort of lower officials have been arrested. Many people in civil society demand that the net be thrown a lot wider to catch a lot more fish. And this was a sophisticated scheme involving people high in high positions, including the Prime Minister's family and a lot of his closer circle. And I think the public is a bit skeptical and is waiting to see whether whether the top people will be indicted or this will be another scenario of sacrificing some little fish in the government. But it's definitely taken a lot of attention, that's for sure.
I recently talked with Misha Glenny, who's written a book called McMafia, and he said that organized crime is a huge problem and very powerful force in Albania. Is that true?
Yeah, many people would argue that the biggest problem in Albania is not, like Misha Glenny said, it's not necessarily organized crime, rather than disorganized government. So I think a lot of the effort that the international community puts is on anti-efforts. It should put in pro-efforts, and I think... you know, organizing the government is probably the best way to disorganize the mafia, that's for sure.
Well, have any conditions been put on Albania before it will be allowed to join NATO?
Yes, and I think democratizing the country and allowing for free and fair elections, as well as modernizing the army, have only partially been fulfilled. So we will wait and see until actual accession and membership into NATO comes into effect next year, whether Albania fulfills this latest requirements on elections.
Do you think joining NATO will be a good thing for Albania?
I think it would be a good thing for the region. It will stabilize the region that has so far been very, very divisive. And I think now from an exporter of peace and security, an importer of peace and security, Albania, with its contributions in Bosnia and Afghanistan and Iraq, has now finally become an exporter of peace and security, and I think that's a healthy sign for the region.
Is the Albanian public following the U.S. presidential elections this year?
Yes, very much so. It is the most important, I think, country when it comes to Albania's relations, and I think, by far second or third news in all newscasts in Albania is the American elections.
Do you have any sense of who people are rooting for?
I think what people expect, I think, is more concentration also on human rights and democratization, as well as the war on terror. And I think a bit of balancing of this is welcomed from the candidates.
Has President Bush met with the Albanian Prime Minister Sali Berisha?
Yes, several times during the visit in Albania, and also in other fora.
And since he has been criticized by the international community, was there any sense that the president said, you know, you really have to clean up your act?
I don't have any evidence of that, and I think very little has changed in Albania. I think usually this relationship with the Bush administration has been waved around the country as a sign of support for a government that has faulted its people in many ways, and our fear has been that this has been used as a blanket of immunity for a government that is abusing this friendship to pressure its own people.
I'm speaking to you in Washington, D.C. How much time do you spend in Albania?
Most of the time, I'm just here for a quick visit, and now we have to run to a meeting with a congressional committee on European affairs, and try to get some of their attention in Albania as well. So I wanted to also thank you for this.
Well, do you feel frustrated? Do you think that not enough attention is paid to this country? After all, it is in one of the most important areas of the world. The Balkans has often been a flashpoint for major problems.
Yeah, I'll take this last question. Yes, it is frustrating. We're trying very, very hard to keep the country into the radar as international attention focuses in other areas. And I think doing the rounds in Washington and talking to folks like yourself, I think helps keep the country in the map. Business is not just yet finished in the Balkans.
As an activist, what are you trying to do? Can you tell us about the group you directed, MIAFT?
I have to, yeah.
Well, we have just another minute anyway. Can you tell us about MIAFT for just 1 minute?
Yeah, MIAFT is the leading watchdog civil society in Albania, mostly in the areas of democratization and freedom of expression, and also a big watchdog in enterprise on government behavior in the last 5 or 6 years.
And what does MIAFT mean?
It means enough in Albania. And I think I should probably say enough to myself and run to this congressional meeting now.
Well, good luck.
Thank you very much.
And my great thanks to Ariane Velie for talking with us today on this underreported segment on Albania. As you probably know, what we try to do on Underreported is to tell you about things that aren't getting enough attention. And Albania is definitely one of those stories. We'll have a lot more coming up in the coming weeks because, unfortunately, the American press does not spend as much time on major stories as it should. And a reminder that this evening I'll be moderating a discussion between three very different musicians, klezmer clarinetist Dave Krakauer, funk trombonist Fred Wesley, and hip-hopper So-Called. We'll find out about their collaboration in a group called Abraham Inc. It's 7:30 at the JCC in Manhattan, 334 Amsterdam Avenue. On tomorrow's show, rock legend Steve Winwood with his latest album, Nine Lives. Also, cinema verite pioneer Robert Drew on his new documentary about JFK. Hungarian novelist Gyorgy Dragoman. And Please Explain is all about malaria. By the way, you can see photos of recent guests on the show, including Gary Carter, Arianna Huffington, and Errol Morris, by going to our show page at WNYC.org and clicking on Photos. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. And we had help today from Barbara Kahn, Judith Weber, and Leslie Dickstein. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. Special thanks to Irene Trudell for engineering our James McMurtry segment. I'm Leonard LoPage, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.